Hello and welcome to this latest episode of Safeguarding Voice. This podcast is produced by Education Child Protection, and on each episode we explore a different area of safeguarding. Our aim is to empower professionals who work with children and vulnerable adults with information and guidance. This episode we are joined by Catherine Goodwin, Jeanette Fuster and Catherine White from West Lee School, exploring how to engage and capture the voice of special educational needs or disabilities, or SEND, young people. Welcome back, listeners. Super excited today not only to be joined by one guest, but by three, the wonderful colleagues at West Lee. So before we aim to make a start talking about our subject today of how to engage young people, let's start with introduction, shall we? So Kath, if you want to introduce yourself, please.
Hello, I'm Catherine Goodwin and I'm the Head of Pastoral Development and the Designated Safeguarding Lead at West Lee Special School.
Fabulous, thank you. And also joined today by...
I'm Catherine White, Attendance and Safeguarding Officer at West Lee School.
And last but by no means least...
Hi, I'm Jeanette Fuster and I'm the Safeguarding Officer.
Fabulous, thank you all very much. And it's wonderful to be back with West Lee. We've done some wonderful work together. And today, of course, we are having a really important podcast exploring the wonderful work you do with your learners, and also to kind of look at those key messages around engaging and capturing the voice of learners with SEND, so special educational needs or disabilities. So firstly, just to kind of tee up our episode for today, let's maybe start with a discussion around why it's so important we capture the voice and views of all of our students, and perhaps what you do here at West Lee to help with that. Kat?
I think all of us are really passionate about safeguarding, and working at a special school, the approach to safeguarding would be the same as in any other school, but we also have additional kind of factors we need to consider. So some of those, and actually they feature right at the start of our safeguarding policy, are to do with the vulnerabilities of our learners and, you know, what having additional needs means. So we've kind of got four statements in our policy. One is about the lack of understanding that some of our young people and children may have in terms of their ability as well. There can be an impairment of how they can resist or avoid abuse. They may have communication difficulties as well, which can make it really difficult for them to communicate what's happening, but also to understand. So that's a real kind of feature in terms of how we look at and support communication. Some of our learners as well, there's external support from other services, so they might be open to Cheviots, which is the Children with Disabilities team in Enfield. So some of those children might go to external clubs as part of respite provision, or they may have carers coming into the house as well. So there might be additional people that they have contact with. And if you link that with their difficulty maybe sometimes in terms of communication, we need our staff to be really vigilant for changes in behaviour, and, you know, if there are incidents that happen, just being really aware of what that kind of behaviour is communicating to us. And then it's just about that kind of isolation as well. So if you're a parent of children with very complex needs, you can be quite isolated. And some of our children can become very dysregulated, and we know that that then brings with it a whole host of other problems if parents really struggle to kind of manage that as well.
Yeah, wonderful. And I'm hearing a lot in there about relationships being so, so important. Relationships for your staff with the learners, getting to know them, getting to know their needs, how they engage and communicate. But also the parents and carers as well, to ensure that they've got that network around to support them, which is so important. And I think that kind of leads us into, you know, talking about, I suppose, relationships. You know, we hear a lot in guidance now, working together, really focusing on building that relationship with families. I mean, how, with your students, what kind of the approaches that you take to effectively engage them and build that trust and rapport?
So I think it starts even with transition. So whether you're transitioning between classes or between different campus sites or even from another school, right at the beginning you're trying to create that kind of relationship and that trust as well. And I think some of our children as well, because of their needs, it's really trying to understand their needs, and it's not just saying, well, you know, an autistic child and they're all going to be the same, because we know that that's you know, that's not the case.
Yeah.
But it's having that real personalised approach to understanding what motivates them, what their communication needs are, what their interests are, and you try and learn the kind of hooks that would then help to kind of pull you in. So if
yeah.
they were interested in trains, I'll just give a generalised example, you might base your communication around that in terms of some of the resources and things that you would use. But I think Jeanette and Catherine might have other ideas as well.
I think what we're really fortunate here that we have such a wide breadth of knowledge in all our colleagues.
Mm.
So, you know, we do have access to the SALT team,
speech and language,
we have occupational therapists, and sometimes they have the little nuggets, and we invite them to meetings when we're discussing our children, because I would be looking always with a safeguarding lens,
yeah,
but then they bring something that's sort of wider to it and might give me something that I know then how I almost have to scaffold the other member of staff.
Mm-hmm.
To approach them with doing some direct work.
That real collaboration.
Yeah, it
yeah.
has to be. And they know, and our teaching assistants are amazing, aren't they? They really know our children, and they really recognise that behaviour is communication.
Yes, yeah.
And that's even more so, isn't it, with our students, I think.
I think the interesting thing and the exciting thing, so the role that I'm currently doing is a new role that was created to bring together all those different pastoral areas, so safeguarding, attendance, therapies, medical, parent support,
mm-hmm.
So that it's all together, so it's not seen as you're not having separate meetings about different children,
mm.
but we're really developing that holistic approach.
And coming together to share ideas.
Exactly, and actually really working alongside our therapists as well. So one of the things that we're looking at the minute is the development of the kind of graduated response, so that our therapists, you know, speech and language therapy and occupational therapy, is actually going into the classroom and working with the class teams. And we've had examples of where children have actually made disclosures to therapists in the class team,
mm.
in the classroom. And actually, it's that kind of working together to try and tease out, I suppose, what the child is actually trying to communicate. And we've really developed, we're really kind of always trying to think about what can we do differently, how can we develop it, how can we make it better, and we've really adapted and developed our approach to talking to children. So we use a communication strategy that I suppose traditionally is a speech and language strategy, but it's comic strip conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a technique developed by Carol Gray. She's an American who developed, first of all, that concept of social stories.
Yeah.
So comic strips is where you're making communication concrete, you're using stick people, you're doing kind of speech bubbles to indicate what someone would have said. You can actually use thought bubbles to show what you might be thinking. And actually, Jeanette's got an example that recently has been done, I don't know.
Yeah, this is kind of hot off the press, where one of our assistant heads yesterday worked with a student, and it was around suicidal comments.
Okay.
So obviously we take all of those seriously, and we worked as a team. We had this concern come in, we spoke to Kath to make sure we had a plan in place of what we were going to do and who was going to do it. So whilst our assistant head went off to work with the child, I was able to kind of support, we need to speak to the parent and what was going on in the background. But yes, it's absolutely knowing your student. And it's called the stages of symbolic development, the speech and language therapists call it. So you need to know where that child is at as to which, if comic strip is the right thing for them.
Yeah.
For this student, it absolutely was. And the assistant had prepared herself before, and I watched her doing it. So it only took about 5 minutes, if that, but she just got her head really clear and went through with me, and we talked it through. And she went off, and obviously our listeners can't see it, but I can show you that
the speech bubbles.
He was, for this child, it was absolutely at the right stage.
Mm.
He was able to very clearly, and he ad-libbed to it a little bit as well, you know, he was able to put to context. It was really helpful for us to communicate with the parent as well.
Mm.
Is there anything you want to say?
I think this technique is useful because we've often, and probably like many other schools, we have a lot of safeguarding where we might be doing mass referrals and there might be Section 47 investigations. So we often have a lot of professionals coming in.
Yeah.
So whether it's members of social care, we have members of the CAPE team, they're coming as part of a Section 47, but we actually will work alongside them to say, can we, this is the, how the child communicates, these are strategies we might use, do you want us to help you with the communication? So I think it's professionals having that confidence.
Definitely.
Because actually someone from the police might not have had training on understanding about communication.
You can only know what you know.
Exactly. So these kind of strategies, and it's been good because we've been able to share some of them recently in some kind of multi-agency training that we've been doing with social care and different kind of parts of the police as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about, because we're really passionate, I suppose, about spreading that message of these are not tools and techniques that you need to have done loads of courses on.
Yeah.
You actually, we can train you, and we're happy to train people even in a very short space of time, like an hour, of these techniques anyone can do with a pencil and a piece of paper as well.
Yeah.
I think one of the things, when I look back, one of the things I think I wish I knew at the start of my career was the power of communication and knowing especially what speech and language therapists can do to support. Because I think in my own misunderstanding years ago was that they were just there to help children with speech impediments. But actually, the biggest kind of change in my understanding has been learning about different types of communication.
Yeah.
So about receptive language, which is how you listen and you take in and you understand and you process what's said to you. And then kind of expressive language, which is where you're communicating what you want to say based on what you've heard and understood.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've then got that whole thing to do with social communication of how you're interacting, not just with your words, but your kind of body language as well. So I think a speech and language therapist would probably give a much deeper, thorough explanation than I have. But one of the things that's really important with whoever it is, whether it's adults or children, if, you know, whether they've got special needs or not, but it's about making language concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always say words are a bit like butterflies. They fly in, they float around, and they disappear. And some of our children, some of them, we know ELCLAN is a communication kind of program, and they say it's up to 10 seconds that it can take for a child to process a question that you've asked. And actually, if you count 10 seconds,
it's a long time.
And there's a real tendency for people to be asking other questions, whereas actually it's these tools, if you use them along with your kind of language, and you're using visuals or you're using now and next boards, or you're sequencing, so you're asking what happened first, what happened next, what happened then, what happened last.
Mm.
Those techniques can actually help children to kind of sequence as well. And I think this is useful because sometimes in the past there's frustrations where professionals, maybe the police or social care, have come to speak to a child.
Mm-hmm.
And they may say, well, their account is very different from what they told you originally. And there's a question as to whether they're being kind of honest.
Mm.
I think the issue is that some children have real trouble with sequencing and their understanding of time and dates. And it may be that they've got real social communication kind of issues, or, you know, that actually are very difficult for them to actually tell you exactly what's happened in a perfect way.
Mm.
So having visuals where you can keep revisiting them, and actually even using a different colour pen the next time you talk to the child about it, it helps to kind of show what the child has said as well.
We had a student last week, actually, who was able to make his own, wasn't he? He was able to draw his own. And again, it was another assistant head who knows this child really well and actually helps him to regulate his emotions when he's drawing.
Yeah.
So as he's trying to tell her the story, he actually drew his own pictures, and she was able to sort of annotate next to them as he was saying it to her, and it was very clear of what, from a safeguarding point of view, what had happened and what, because he'd just come in so dysregulated, but he was able to put it on paper, and it calmed him enough to be able to actually tell us what had
and
happened
express
as well. But it comes back to those relationships again. They're so key.
And also I'm hearing a lot about the openness of staff to maybe do that bit of trial and error and trying to work out with the young person actually how best do they communicate. And you've discussed lots of really great tangible examples there. We'll pop some signposts in the show notes for listeners. But that kind of sometimes giving it a go and seeing what really
fits. I think
fits.
That's really, that's the culture that we have at Wesley. We're really lucky that we've got such incredible staff who want to try different techniques, and you try something, it may not work, so you adapt it. And it's that real openness to kind of learning and development. And, well, it's also that kind of being open to being quite solution focused. Well, if this hasn't worked, you know, one of the things we've introduced this year is something called a triage meeting, where we will get the team around the child together for a bit. It's an inclusion meeting, but we might have the speech and language therapist there or a school nurse there, where we're all kind of problem solving together of there's a particular concern, we're not quite sure, we don't feel we've got all the pieces of the puzzle yet, we're having trouble communicating, what can we do, let's try it a different way. One of the things we've introduced as well, and it takes that whole kind of concrete idea of making things visual that people can see, we've introduced a technique. It just came about, I think, randomly one day. We had some little kind of Playmobil people and Lego characters on my desk, and Catherine had donated some as well from your son, hadn't you?
Yeah.
And we were using them with children to say, okay, so this happened, this is you, so pick a character. So there was, I think there was a Mickey Mouse there, so they picked Mickey Mouse, and they said, who else was there? Well, my dad was there and my mum was there. And we said, well, pick two people that could be your mum and your dad. And the children were moving around. It was almost like a 3D incident report kit. And Jeanette's really taken that idea and has been doing lots of work with primary in terms of creating these kind of kits.
Yeah, because it's a little bit, you know, my background is early years. That's where I originated from. So it's a lot of looking at small world play. So in the primary area, when we've had safeguarding and police come down, we tend to put out the doll's house and the characters, but not obviously, they're in the room. So if the children want to go to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had a situation where we've had two characters and one is very much hitting the other one. They're using them to snap. The child hasn't said anything. And police and social worker have said to us, well, they didn't disclose anything. So our early year staff have been able to support and say, actually, for us, they're communicating a lot. This is what's happening. This is them. This is the parent.
Yeah.
And this is what's happening in the home. So we're trying to develop kits so that at every site, with considering all those stages of symbolic development, they can go to a kit, so they've got it to hand. They're not scrabbling around for paper and pen. Everything's in there. And they can go and help themselves and think, right, how are we going to do this? Particularly if it's an emergency and we've got somebody coming down to speak to them.
Yeah, and that's very empowering for staff to help their confidence, I imagine, as well, to know they've got almost a whole kit of things to choose from to really help support that communication.
And then it has to be that familiar member of staff that the child's comfortable with. And then if they're not very experienced in safeguarding, so I sat with somebody this morning who has this amazing relationship with this child, but was worried because she doesn't have the safeguarding lens. So I sat with her and we scaffold each other and worked with this child that actually was quite good at giving us some information.
And that links me right back to where you started, Kath, around culture. You know, that sharing of knowledge, that being open, that being receptive, not just with your young people, but with each other, with staff.
Yeah.
How important that is.
I think it is, and we're not a kind of hierarchical kind of organisation, so we don't think as a leadership team that we know all the answers. We don't. We're always learning, and we're learning all the time from, it could be quite a new member of our support staff that's just joined us, but actually it's just having that. One of our values is about innovation, so it's how people come up with these most amazing ideas and they're like, have you thought about that? And let's try this. So, and it's also, we're very lucky that we've got that kind of culture where we're all collaborating together as well. So
yeah, and I know a lot of our listeners will be sitting there almost writing a bit of a list of the things and suggestions you've shared with them, which is brilliant. Lots of really tangible stuff there. Relationship building, being open, receptive, getting to know the people that you're working alongside and working for, ultimately the families that you support as well. And lots of really tangible, practical examples of engagement as well, which is really lovely to hear. So almost like the Lego figures, the comic book strips, knowing about the different forms of communication and not being afraid, I suppose, to upskill in that area. Like, as you referenced, Kath, it wasn't originally something that you were that maybe familiar with, but now having had an overview, how supportive that's been. And I suppose on that basis, and I know the wonderful relationships that you've strived to create with those partner organisations, you spoke about the speech and language team, I suppose for maybe perhaps education colleagues sitting on the listening on to the podcast today that may be thinking, where do I start in perhaps reaching out and creating those relationships? So do you have any thoughts to share how to do that?
I think the, you know, in terms of your kind of your multi-agency team within your local area, I would imagine that all kind of local authorities would have a team who are like the equivalent of our Cheviots team. So it's the Joint Service for Children with Disabilities. So that would be a kind of an organisation that you'd want to, if you hadn't already made connections with. There is in Enfield, as well as having the team of speech and language therapists, there's also an organisation called ECAS, which is actually for schools that wouldn't maybe have a speech and language therapist, but you can actually link in with them, and they run lots of different training as well. Elkland training is incredible. It's usually something, I think people can do it individually, but you can become an Elkland school where you have all of your staff have kind of training as well. So it's lots of different forms of communication and how that links to teaching and learning as well. So that would be another suggestion of something that I would kind of recommend. And I think it's just looking at what your safeguarding partnership has in terms of training opportunities as well, and, you know, linking in with those, or not being afraid to say, actually, we really could benefit from some training like this. Would you be prepared to put it on? So
yeah. And you can't beat networking, can you? One of the great things about things not being as much on Teams post the pandemic is when you're at courses or meetings
with others.
You have those chats over a cup of coffee, and that, you know, and Kath gets dragged into doing more training. But I mean, Kath's really good on a Teams. At the end of a team, she might go, actually, can I just have you hang on a minute? I need to ask you something. So she has still networks.
But not
on
being
Teams.
Afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think being in person, you can't beat that, can you? Just having those conversations and say, or like saying to your team, come along, observe, see what we do. And that really works.
And Catherine works like really closely with the Educational Welfare Service as well, so we've done some training with them, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, in terms of, you know, thinking about the students that you're working with, and, you know, sometimes there are new services as well that you haven't worked with before.
Mm.
So as Jeanette said, you're always trying to think about how can we do this. We recently had training, we joined... and it was from the Safeguarding Partnership. It's one of their practice weeks. So it was on signs of safety,
mm-hmm.
which is the approach they use in social care.
Yeah.
So we've tried to kind of develop our own approach here, really link with that, with like the free houses and that whole kind of, what are we worried about?
Yeah.
What's the danger statement?
Well, that's what your triage comes from, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We start with what's going well, even with the triage, to get those strengths.
Yeah.
But
there's no shame in magpieing ideas that work elsewhere. And that's, I think, how you begin building and evolving and striving to offer that great standard of care. Some really, really great stuff, which I'm sure our listeners are going to be really thankful for. And thank you so much for your time. And we'll make sure that we pop there for listeners into the show notes all of the great examples of where to go for further reading if you wish to find out more. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this latest episode of Safeguarding Voice. For any documentation, guidance or resources referenced in this episode, please see the show notes. And a special thank you to the team at Westleigh for joining us. This podcast was produced by Education Child Protection and was hosted by me, Carly Danes. Music production by Abby Dowsett. For more information about safeguarding, you can find us on all the social media platforms, LinkedIn, X, Facebook and Instagram. And please do listen to more of our episodes that are available on the resources area of our website, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you have time, please leave us a comment. We would love to hear from you.